ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
A long shared ambition of First Nations artists and organisations is to establish a thriving First Nations performing arts industry. One that's influenced, designed, and decided by mob at every step. So what's holding us back? And what can be done to move forward? Hello and welcome to Away, Indigenous Art and Culture on ABC Radio National. I'm Rudy Bremer. Over the past five decades, there's been meteoric growth in the First Nations arts and culture sector. But one area that stayed stagnant is behind-the-scenes craft for both stage and screen. Today, you'll meet some of the young creatives who've been testing their skills in prop making, makeup, and costume design as part of a pathway program to help mob broaden their arts practice. Plus, Bunjalung electropop artist Janaba talks about culture and contrast ahead of her Laneway Festival feature. And Gungawa Nagara shares some Gunyandi language for Word Up. Stay with me here on Away.
I've got a piece of fabric. Come on.
There's a sewing lesson underway when I walk into the National Institute of Dramatic Art, also known as NIDA. Swaths of material being carefully pinned as it drapes over mannequins. Because here, at the country's premier arts educator for careers in stage, screen, events, and interactive entertainment, which is best known for producing actors like Miranda Tapsell, Maine Wyatt, and Rob Collins, the focus has shifted to the work that goes on behind the scenes. Over the course of a week, young creatives aged 18 to 25 are getting hands-on experiences and expanding their knowledge of what an arts career can look like. And this mob, they came from all over. Like Tione Eads, an actress from Noongar country. Having recently played Yvonne Goolagong's sister Gail in ABC's miniseries about the tennis superstar, Tione says the Pathway program has deepened her appreciation for behind-the-scenes work.
Okay. Hi, my name is Tione Eads. I'm from Perth. I'm a Noongar Yorga, and I came over here to experience what it was like behind the scenes of film and theatre and things like that, and get a bit of a taste of everything, because I'm usually in front of the camera, so it's different for me and it makes me appreciate the work that goes into it as well. But yeah, I'm just here for the experience, because I just never realised how much effort they put into making it, like especially doing the clothes now, like all the different costumes I've worn and stuff, things like that. Now I'm going to like thank everyone who does it, because I hated puppeting yesterday and now I hate this.
This talking?
Now I hate the costume making.
Oh my god. Okay, well, okay, I've learned what you hated, yeah. And have a new appreciation for what yeah. Have you loved about this program?
Okay. I loved the makeup actually, and learning how to make wounds and cuts look realistic. I never knew how to do makeup. I never like mucked around with it. I've always got my makeup done, but yeah, it's just I learnt that less is more with makeup, and that it's so basic and easy once you get it, but you just never know where to start. And yeah, so that kind of opened my eyes up. I also love the stage management. Playing around with the headphones and the sound, talking to each other, doing the lighting and stuff, even though I didn't even know how to do it. But, you know, it's just random buttons at the end of the day.
Tiaran isn't the only person with a new appreciation of those skills. Ashanti Hammond is a Bundjalung Gomeroi woman from Lismore. She already has a Bachelor of Screen and Stage Acting under her belt. Reflecting on the most challenging lesson or workshop of the week, Ashanti says...
The sewing. Like, not even just the sewing, it was just the pins. Like, stabbing yourself so many times, but, like, just learning, like, how to create the physical, like, props and clothing that people use in theatre shows or shows and stuff.
For Ashanti, taking part in the program is an opportunity to learn about the industry and possibly make her a better producer or director.
You hear a lot of stories about, like, having really crappy directors and them not really appreciating everyone who's putting their blood, sweat and tears in. And I think just taking that into consideration and just being more appreciative of them, because, yes, you're directing it, but it's like you wouldn't be able to direct it without the people who casted everyone, who created the set, who created the costumes, the props. Like, yeah, I just think they're not appreciated enough. And I think that's something I would love to be able to do as a director, is really just show appreciation, not just to the cast members, because, yes, they're helping bring the story to life, but it's also everyone who actually creates the physical scene that they're in that moment.
As much as this program is about gaining hands-on experience, it's also a chance to introduce MOB to areas of the art sector in which we're underrepresented. In 2022, when First Nations arts practitioners gathered on Kaurna Country to mark the 50th anniversary of the establishment of the Australia Council's Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Arts Board, people everywhere were talking about this skills gap. Where are our costume designers? Where are our lighting designers? Our stage designers? The call that we need MOB in these roles is very real and being echoed across multiple institutions and companies. Just last year, Black Dance released a workforce development framework for 2025 to 2030, looking at long-term investment, cultural safety, and 100% First Peoples employment across First Nations performing arts collective organisations. We were at 53.4% when the framework was published. So that's the industry rationale behind a pathway program like this. For participants like Ian Ludwig, who has previously worked as a camera operator, this week at NIDA has been eye-opening.
My name is Ian Ludwig. I'm a Yidinji Kukiyalinji man, and I'm also a South Sea Islander. I grew up in Cairns, but originally grew up in Yarrabah as well. And I've been into this filmmaking ever since I was a little kid. Like, my dad had a little short film company called Tendor Quick Films, and he would do projects for NITV, and I saw that he was doing editing, so I hopped on, and I just clicked with that sort of thing. And then I did that as a subject at school, got my Cert 4 in screen and media, and I worked on a TV show called Black Snow as a cameraman.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay, Black Snow on Stan, yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
I'm always down for whatever creative arts there are. Like, last year I was doing tables for the Cairns show. I did up the table, cut them down, and then I did my Aboriginal design on it. I copied over my late Uncle Wayne, like drawings, and I put it on the table as a little tribute for him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but yeah, this program drew me in because I'll be learning, like, covering all types of arts, and I'm always just down learning what brings it all together.
Biggest challenge so far?
Being social. That's that's my biggest challenge. But that's the thing with arts. It's so collaborative. So you always have to be pushing yourself, sort of thing. So I'm more of a listener than a talker, but I'm always there for people whenever it comes to these social things. So yeah, that's my biggest problem.
Hey, I'm Tom Mac. I'm a Wurrumungu man with Aranda and Walpiri blood in me. I have always been super interested in everything creative. I've gone from reading to writing books to trying out acting, then trying out voice acting, then trying out dancing, which I do very often. I travel to Sydney in July to participate in a dance tournament to represent Darwin last year. And in the past couple of years, I've become infatuated with the technical and the behind the scenes of theatre and movie writing and acting and everything that goes into entertainment on the screen or on the stage.
This is a program that has a focus on the work that is done behind the scenes. Why do you think it's important for MOB to be in those roles?
I think it's very important for MOB to be in these roles because if they were not, then they would not be given the creative freedom or the outlet that they might want or need to express themselves, really, to help build a more culturally diverse industry and to help branch out into more things that cover Indigenous stories in the mainstream, on the mainstream side of TV. Because as of now, it's there, but it's definitely not there as much as most people would want it to be.
I've got one more participant I want to introduce you to. But unlike Tione, Ashanti, Ian and Tom, Wiradjuri woman Whoopi Hupman hasn't got any experience in the dramatic arts. Still, Whoopi has a big interest in storytelling.
Whether that's, you know, through screen, whether that's through costume or scene making, anything like that. You know, I'm someone that myself, I wear a hijab, and there's not lots of MOB that look like me. So I've got lots of stories to tell as well. And I just thought it was important to be in that space. I'm someone that's sort of sitting in the middle of two worlds, and that can be a bit confusing for some people, that can be a cool thing for some people, and some people just won't get it whatsoever. And I thought that if more people like me were in the industry in any way, shape or form, it would just open up pathways for others like me. And I wanted to be a trailblazer and do that for us.
What are the skills and the tools that you are gaining from being part of the program that you think will help you in that, like, in that process, in that journey?
I should be saying that it's all the crafts that we're doing, like sewing and makeup and technical management, but really it's just communicating. It's just speaking to everyone, building relationships, getting a message across the industry, and yeah, just letting people see that we exist and that we come in lots of shapes and sizes. And, yeah, we belong here as well.
I actually really love that it's the relationships and the community building that has been, like, the most important aspect of this, because I think that's one of the reasons for having a cohort come together and be part of a full week is to be able to, like, quite sincerely build community amongst other creatives. What has been the most challenging thing that you have learned?
I think because everything is new to me, it's all been a little bit challenging. But in saying that, I have so much respect now for the people that work in this industry because, you know, I was burning my fingers on hot glue, making props. I was sticking needles into my fingers, trying to sew. You know, I was working in two minds, trying to call cues. It's not easy at all. They make it look easy. And so it just makes you think about how many hundreds of times they've all been through this and have burnt their fingers and stabbed themselves just to become who they are. And, yeah, it's just a wicked thing to see. It's awesome.
Whoopi Hupman there. She's one of the participants of the Pathway Program at the National Institute of Dramatic Art. You also heard from Tione Eads, Ashanti Hammond, Tom Mack and Ian Ludwick.
This behind-the-scenes intensive was a free week-long program allowing young creatives to explore their potential and discover new pathways to future study or careers in the arts. You're listening to Away, and in just a moment, Bundjalung electropop artist Janava will join me in the Radio National studios. But first, this is Doin' to Me, which comes from her debut album, Did I Stutter? I know you hear me from the darkest place. I know you see me screaming your name. And I hate what you do to me too, but I love what you do to me. And I hate what you do to me too, but I love what you do to me. And I hate what you do to me too, but I love what you do to me. And I hate what you do to me too. That's queer Bundjalung pop artist Janava. Written when she was just 19 years old, it features on her debut album, Did I Stutter? And although initially uncertain about her songwriting abilities, Janava has found a sense of liberation in the process. Now she's carved out a space of her own with a sound that's bold, raw, and unapologetic. And in just a few short years, Janava's already hit some big milestones. From playing at national festivals like Spilt Milk, Listen Out and Beyond the Valley, to releasing an album, to scoring a New South Wales Music Award nomination off the back of that album. It was actually at those awards that I first met Janava. So I kicked things off by asking her how it felt to be nominated in the First Nations music category.
I feel like I didn't really understand what was going on, lol. And I also just like was kind of shocked because like there's so many incredible like projects that have come out in 2025. And so, and even going to the awards, I feel like it's solidified again, just like how much cool stuff we're doing in community and how incredible the stuff Indigenous New South Wales is releasing. People, when they think of Indigenous Australia, they don't necessarily think of New South Wales.
Mm. Yeah, there's a bit of blindness to like Southeast.
Yeah. Mm. And like, I feel like that's, especially in Sydney as well, like there were so many staunch mob in Sydney. And to live in Sydney in the climate that we live in is a hard thing to do. As an Indigenous person, it is hard. And so to see like so much incredible stuff coming out, it's just like, just yeah, I feel like it's super encouraging not only for me to see other artists doing it, because I'm like, thank God I'm not the only one. But it's like so good for other artists to see as well, because we're doing it, like, and it's really cool to be even considered amongst everybody who was nominated in that category. I was just blown away.
Because you're there amongst the Stiff Gins, 3%, Barker, who took home the prize that night, Ziggy Rama, and then you were the fifth.
Yeah, I know. It was so insane, absolutely insane. And, like, my mum and I obviously grew up listening to the Stiff Gins. So, like, yeah, I know the women and they're amazing. But to be, like, considered, like, in a category of them was insane, like, absolutely insane.
Janaba, when you decided to make music your career, your life, who were the artists that you were listening to?
I honestly do not think there was like one specific in time where I was like, oh my God, now I'm going to do it. You know what I mean? I think there was moments where I was like ready to op out for very different reasons. But I feel like I've always wanted to be a musician and a singer. Like I grew up listening to like the Chicks, and I like grew up listening to so many different genres of music, I guess. But I don't think there was like one specific point in time where I was like, okay, I'm going to make music. And there was like a specific artist that like pushed me to do that, I guess. But I think because of that, there's so many different artists along the way who have like obviously influenced my music regardless.
Because you released your debut album, Did I Stutter? Last year.
Yeah.
Who were the musical kind of influences that you had while working on that?
Yeah, I feel like a big musician that I was really inspired by was Amaray. She's an American artist, but regardless, she makes like a bunch of different genres of music. And I think I was really inspired by the fact that she kind of didn't cater to a specific genre, and it's because she's like a songwriter and a creative, and obviously she makes all of her music herself. And so when you do that, you kind of are influenced by so many different types of music. But I feel like it really pushed me to not filter myself in regards to like genre that I wanted to release specifically for this album. But yeah, she's amazing and extremely talented, and yeah, I love her. I feel like when you love like certain musicians and they inspire your music, the way that they inspire you is like the process. It's not necessarily the outcome. So if I'm listening to music at a certain time and I end up writing a song, I am often inspired by like sometimes it's like the rhythm of the way that they write. Like for example, like rap. If I listen to rap at the time, like I'll rhyme a lot in my music or lyrically or stuff like that. And then it depends like on the production if I'm inspired by that. But I feel like with Amaray was the production side of things. I was really like pushing myself to explore different styles of production and just kind of lock in. If there was one song that was like really influenced by her, maybe Psyche. A-S-I-K-E-E. That's a song that I released on my album. And I feel like that stylistically was really inspired by her album and her like music in general. The style of production, the bass line, I guess. Yeah. It just like made a lot of sense. And I feel like it explores like a little bit, it's a little bit more like dark compared to my other music and more like, I guess like R&B facing. So it made a lot of sense. But in terms of her album, Sad Girls Love Money, the remix with Carly Uchis, it's incredible. So good. When I heard that song, I literally played it for like 3 months straight on repeat. It was incredible. Yeah, that's like the first time, but I definitely think that really inspired, yeah, that track, which is really cool.
I guess listening to your music, because it's electropop, kind of like broadly speaking, there's this upbeat kind of like high energy, joy, but that's not necessarily always where your lyrics are going. Like your lyrics are occasionally like challenging and like kind of exploring the messiness of being in your 20s and being
all that coming of age stuff that I really hope that I am past, but
fingers crossed, babe. Same, same.
But still can find when I listen to a song that speaks to the moment. Yeah, I mean, what is it about that contrast?
I think everybody can listen to music like that. Yeah, it's like easier to digest when something is fun. It's like if the packaging is appealing, people are more likely to pick it up. It's a similar vibe to like the production. And I honestly don't think I've intentionally been like, oh, I want it to be like, you know, easy for people to consume. It's not necessarily me making a conscious choice about that. It's just that for me personally, it makes the most sense. I think when something is hard, it doesn't necessarily mean it's ugly. Sometimes it's just messy. And I feel like electronic music is a little bit messy and it makes a lot of sense for it to be that kind of energy. And I feel like for your early 20s, it also makes a lot of sense as well, because yes, it's hard and those experiences can sometimes be like, yeah, a little bit more heavy, but you would never change those experiences. And at the time, I think you're a little bit oblivious to what's happening. You're not necessarily like, oh my God, this is terrible. You're kind of just trying to live, trying to survive, you know? So I feel like it's not necessarily as dark in that moment, but that sometimes you look back and you're like, oh, that was really hard.
Yeah, that was grim. That was a...
Yeah. But, you know, we were still like doing the thing, like just trying. And I feel like, yeah, I think it's a really cool way to experience that through music.
That did actually make me think about like the, I guess like how you find your way to those reflective moments when you are amongst it, because you are actually in your 20s and
I'm going through it right
going
now, guys.
How do you find that line of reflecting on these moments and these things that have inspired a song without
it getting too dark?
Yeah, or overexposing yourself or others, you know? Like, how do you walk that line for yourself?
I feel like with music, you kind of create your own line.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And I feel like because you have to get so, like, vulnerable and experiencing it in that moment, you don't necessarily realize how dark it is, which is your early 20s. But for me, I don't think there is a boundary. If I filter myself, if I put a boundary on it, if I am concerned about it getting too dark, it's not relatable.
Mm.
Because sometimes it is going to be too vulnerable and it's too much. And that's like the reality of making music that should mean something. It's sometimes there isn't always a boundary. But in saying that, my own personal boundaries, they are different to like my musical boundaries. So like if that like was a discussion that I was having with some rando about like a song, maybe I'm not going to be as vulnerable about it in that moment if I'm not fully comfortable with you. But music, I feel like the beauty of being a musician and being a songwriter is that it's your opportunity to be as raw as you need to be or can be. And I think as a lot of black women, like we are very much like have to be very staunch and have to be really, really strong in our own identity so that, you know, people can't take away from our power. And so there has to be a place in which you can find like, I guess, taking down that wall, processing all of that trauma. Otherwise, like, you kind of lose yourself, I guess.
Yeah. The nature of pop music has changed so much, even just over the last, I guess, 10 years. TikTok being a massive influence, both in the way that artists are finding their audience, but also it's really like quite literally changed the shape of music. Songs are shorter in order to suit a platform. How consciously are you working through those kinds of constraints and necessities?
I feel like it's funny that you say that, because I was talking to someone recently about like how I feel like we went through a phase where people wanted stuff that was really like lyrics weren't as deep. and that weren't really telling a story. We kind of just wanted to like listen to music that was easy to listen to. It didn't have to mean nothing. It just had to sound good. I feel like now we're at a point in time where we're actually leaning more into storytelling. And I think people appreciate that because anybody can make a song that doesn't mean anything. Like, it's really not that hard. But when you are able to connect with people and tell a story and convey something that's different, that's going to engage someone more. And it's also like longevity as an artist, as a song itself, like that makes more sense and that's going to be more sustainable for you. So I do think that we are coming to a point in which people are preferring like songs that actually are more genuine. And I think that's a better way to connect with an artist as well. Like people are going to, if they connect with a song emotionally, they're going to want to seek out that artist as well. And it creates, like, I guess, more of a community. So I do think it's changing. But for me personally, I think it's a good lesson and it's a challenge as a songwriter because you do have to sometimes think about what, like, structurally is going to be easy to receive.
Mm.
Not necessarily the lyrics, but like the actual simplicity of the song.
Yeah. Because I get a sense, and I don't know that I could necessarily point to a particular artist, but I feel like the hook has become so much more important because that's the viral moment. Like that's the shareable, like, yep. You know, 45 seconds that the TikTok dance gets choreographed to.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Like, I feel like choruses and like the hook or the main like melody, I guess, is definitely like it's important, but sometimes like a challenge isn't necessarily a bad thing. Like it can be like an opportunity to like create something really cool. The more that you practice your skill, like the better it's going to become and the cooler it's going to get. And like, yeah, sometimes it's good, but I do think unfortunately it's not always like a sustainable process. Like, I guess with fast fashion, you know what I mean? Like, you can see fast fashion, like, for a second in time, like, it might be convenient, but the long-term impact is obviously astronomical.
Yeah.
And I feel like for songwriters, yes, you can do, like, little moments that, you know, don't really mean anything, but like long term, you're going to hate yourself. Like that's not the, yeah, I feel like maybe not everybody else is like doing it for therapeutic relief, but I feel like if you are actually getting something from making music and you're constantly having to filter yourself and you're constantly having to be like, we've just got to get out this, you know, this short something, like it doesn't really mean anything. And I mean, that's like all good. If you're okay with that, play, go off. But like, I feel like for people who are making music that they want it to mean something and they want it to bring something like purpose to themselves or other people. Yeah. It's definitely, you have to look at a more sustainable approach.
This kind of leads me to another aspect of music that I wanted to ask you about, because pop music has such an international sound. How do you, Janaba, anchor your culture to pop music?
I feel like that's that boundary, isn't it, that we talked about before. I was having a chat with my auntie a couple months ago and we were talking about the fact that some people will be able to incorporate like stories or language and whatever else into music, and to be that level of vulnerable about your own cultural identity is like insane. Like it's really insane. It's a huge, like, people are extremely racist, which we already know, but also there's a lot of lateral violence. Not only that, but like your own personal like cultural experience, lore, whatever else it is, like it, for me personally, I don't think it is a part of the discussion that I'm having in this project. It will always play a role, but it's my own personal role. It's not necessarily something that I wanted to include in, yeah, I feel like it's a separate part of myself that is for myself. And I've always like been taught that, like, and again, like, I'm sure this is like, everybody do your own thing, whatever you're comfortable with. But for me personally, I don't really want to profit off my cultural experience.
Mm.
Like, yes, I'm an Indigenous woman, I have an Indigenous name. But at the end of the day, like, if I want to go bush and I want to go out with my auntie and learn, I don't want to, like, that's my own journey and I don't want it to be anybody else's, you know. It's not something that I want to share. That's my boundary personally, because I don't know, I think it's just something that, like, is so, like, valuable, and it's invaluable. And I don't want it to be something that I would ever, like, sell, or for it to be consumable in a way that is palatable or in a certain time frame or whatever else, because one song, one lyric is never going to be a way to, like, portray my cultural experience. I feel like that's 100% where I draw the line in terms of songwriting and, like, releasing as a prop project. I'm staunch because of my cultural identity, but that doesn't necessarily mean I have to tell you about that cultural process. Like, those things can be separate, and it doesn't take away from how staunch I am.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love that. You have a new song out.
Yes.
Tell me about it.
It's called Buster. I released it with an artist called Highlander, and he's Gadigal Mob. And we'd been working together for the last 6 or so months. We literally did one studio session. We wrote that song, and, like, it was just, the energy was unmatched. Yeah, it was insane. So, yeah, I'm so happy that it's out and, like, people can hear it. It's so amazing. I love it. Yeah, it was such a whirlwind process.
Take me into the studio.
I'd just gotten off, like, a 10-hour shift and I was so low energy. Like, I was so done. I was tired. I needed a feed. I needed a coffee. I needed a fag. I needed it all. I was, like, literally on the ground. I was dragging myself to this studio session. I was like, I just got to do it. Like, just push through. And I pull up in the session and I was running late, and Highlander had, like, started working on a little demo moment with the production. And I was just, like, so not willing to overthink it. I was just like, I just need to jump in and do it. And I was like, let me just improv. Give me the, like, headphones and set up the mic, and we'll just run it a couple of times and just, like, not think about it and just do it. Because I was like, let's just see what we can find, you know. And I feel like when I'm in that energy, I'm a little bit chaotic. But it's also the most, like, natural, like, that's me on, like, to my core, you know. I just literally started riffing off random ideas, and we ran around. Like, it wasn't like, oh yeah, first take, all good. No, it definitely wasn't that. Literally just me being unfiltered and just saying some random stuff. And we went through and, like, cut up a bunch of, like, little things, and we, like, refined some of the lyrics, and yeah, it just, like, literally fell together.
Is there anything from that initial improv that got stayed?
Yeah. Yeah, it would have been the main chorus. Yeah. Crusty, busted, dirty little dog. That was literally when I remember when I bloody said it on the recording. Because I feel like I always say, like, off-the-cuff stuff, but you know when you record it, like, it's just different because you're like, oh, my God, like, I just couldn't be bothered to overthink it. So, yeah, that definitely, that first chorus was, yeah, that was on the original one, which I feel like really brought the energy. Also, the first line, you're gross, that's literally one of the first verse. And, I remember writing that and being like, yep.
Beautiful, powerful.
Yeah.
And then, look, Janaba, I can't let you leave without asking you about being a part of Laneway this year. How are you feeling?
Nervous. Everybody's like, oh yeah, I'll be there. Oh my God, I've got, like, a couple of fellas that have interviewed me be like, yeah, I'll be there, I'll see you there. I'm like, far out, man.
I mean, I've got tickets.
What are you doing? It's just more pressure to me to be incredible, which I think is a good thing, because if I'm not nervous, it means I don't care. Whereas I do. I genuinely, like, this is a huge lineup, and I feel like Laneway is known for putting on artists that are incredible performers. And so that's just more reason for me to just put absolutely everything into this show. So I'm really excited, but I'm nervous, but it's also like, it's good nerves.
Yeah. Is there anybody on the lineup that you're super, super excited about?
Everybody in the lineup is incredible. They've got such an incredible lineup this year. Like, it's insane. I feel like there's so many people that I'm genuinely excited to go out and watch, which for me, I normally am like, I'll see the black artists and I won't see anyone else. Because I'm like, okay, we're always in a rush. Like, we're always running around. You're on tour. You got a lot of things to do and I don't want to overwhelm myself. But there's so many people in this lineup that I genuinely want to see, which is really exciting. But yeah, Pink Panthers is definitely someone I'm excited because I feel like her energy is like beautiful. Her songwriting is beautiful and it makes a lot of sense.
I mean, Laneway is a massive way to kickstart your year, but what else have you got coming up for 2026?
Just more music.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like we're just getting started and this is a great way to start the year and it can only get better from here. 2026 better be my year. I will accept nothing less.
That's it. That's a beautiful way to... Cool. All right. You know what? I really do think this is going to be Janaba's year. That was electropop icon Janaba here on Away, and you've heard about her latest song, Buster, so why not have a listen? Bundjalung pop artist Janaba with her latest song, Buster. Janaba will bring her euphoric electropop anthems and colourful aesthetic to Laneway Festival. You can catch her there or grab yourself a copy of her debut album, Did I Stutter? And listen anytime you like. I'm Rudy Bremer. This is Away,
Indigenous Arts and Culture on Radio National, and it's time now for Word Up. Walmajari Gunayandi and Bunuba elder Konkua Nagara is a blues and gospel singer from Western Australia. She's also your language legend. Konkua actually speaks four languages, or five if you include Creole. But today, she's focusing on Gunayandi. It's her father's language and comes from the central Kimberley region in Western Australia. For Word Up, Konkua is sharing the Gunayandi word for a significant place on Gunayandi country.
Bukulba means happy.
Word Up, bringing you the diverse languages of Black Australia, one word at a time.
Kinagai.
Birluin.
Walter.
Kalang.
Badjili.
Ngalungir.
Bambach.
Dianye.
Injamara.
Guram.
Mijal.
Reipiri.
Ngaraguche nama.
Gani warangung.
Munyip.
Doma ninialka. Waka niniana.
Wardadoia.
Ngundingi dangan.
Wukuk.
Kuwayu.
Delkup.
Tiepa.
Murupuk.
My name is in Gunayandi, Konkua, and then my skin name is Nagara. I speak Gunayandi. My father was a Gunayandi. In Gunayandi, I'll say Ngindajiri we ngara ke junangara rombaiwa. So my that in Gunayandi I said something. This country. This place called Dumbaywa, it is my dreaming place, is good. And it's in Gunayandi country. Why it's significant? It's because my Jarin came from there. Jarin is your totem, your animal, because we believe in spirits, you know, rotating from animal to human. And when my father killed the porcupine, which is my spirit totem, they knew that when she became pregnant with me, they knew already that there was a totem killed just previously, you know, maybe a month before that, and she got pregnant. We are strong, proud people. And let me tell you, the other First Nations, you are spiritual people. We are all spiritual people. In the spirit, we existed. We existing in this, not only the body part of us, but also, you know, the physical as well as spiritual. So when you look around the bush and you are connected to that bush, you are connected to the tree. Now in my country, the birds and the trees and everything is connected to me through my skin group. Now, there's the tree bloodwood is Chambindi, which is my grandmother or my grandfather through my mother's side. And the Barramundi in the river is Nyapana or Chawandi, which is my uncle or my mother. So all of those, the connections are there in the trees, in the river. And I wouldn't want to destroy the river or do anything with the water if a member of my family is there, you know. My skin group, the Barramundi, and all of those others, and if I destroy the air, then there's the forest around me. If it's all bloodwood, well, that's my grandfather, because they've all connected to me through my skin group, and the birds, you know, and all that, and I wouldn't want to destroy the whole, you know, destroy the air and the ground, if any of those things exist on those, and their livelihood is there. You know, the snake, the blackhead snake is Jungura. And so that's related to me like my son, you know, So I'm telling you, everyone, look after your country, look after yourself, look after your country, and stay well.
Word Up. Bringing you the diverse languages of Black Australia, one word at a time.
Kunkua Nagara there, sharing a little Gunyandi. It's just one of the many languages that she speaks and sings. You can catch the full series of Word Up on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also catch Kunkua at Womadelaide Adelaide on Kaurna Country in March. That's almost all for Away this week. But before I go, I want to take a moment to talk about something that's been weighing heavy on our community. Last Monday, at an Invasion Day rally in Perth, a 31-year-old man allegedly threw a device containing screws and ball bearings surrounded by an explosive liquid into a crowd of about 2,500 people. While there is an investigation underway that now includes not just the Western Australia Police, but ASIO and the Australian Federal Police, the rally's organiser, Fabian Yaron, criticised the initial responses of the police, the government and the media as inadequate. Speaking with Hack on Triple J, Professor Braddon Hill had this to say.
These kinds of gatherings are coming together of communities around a shared purpose, and often it's around, for Invasion Day, truth-telling and how we can be mature as a nation. And this is probably the most extreme act of disrespect and a fear-inducing kind of moment that, as I say, it feels new. So a lot of people are really reeling. I think people are seeing a tone and discourse in media that is a little bit gentler and softer when it comes to this particular issue. And so they're, you know, responding to that clearly. Of course, though, we have to be patient and understand that there has to be investigation and due process. We understand that. But there seems to be a disproportionate response between an incident like this and similar incidents where we have leaders speaking out incredibly clearly about, you know, the concerns around these kinds of incidents. And so I think there's a sense that this is a disproportionate response, and there's too much of a silence, not only in media, but also from our leaders in the state, but also on the national stage as well. So there's a bit of anger because of that, I think.
Professor Hill is a Noongar man from the southwest of Western Australia and the Deputy Vice-Chancellor of Students, Equity and Indigenous at Edith Cowan University. He was actually on his way to the rally himself on Monday when he got a message telling him not to go into the city.
My immediate reaction and my thoughts on it now is that this was clearly a targeted and terrifying incident. It's deeply concerning, absolutely concerning, and inciting fear amongst our community in a way that feels new, if I'm honest. Absolutely understand that there has to be a process, and it's not a trial that we can do by social media. But I think the vacuum that social media and conversations and discussions that are happening in that space are filling the vacuum. So I think we absolutely have to wait and see how this lands. But we cannot deny that what is understood now is that this has developed a lot of anger and fear within the Aboriginal community. And I think we can recognise that at the same time as letting the authorities do their job.
I'm heartsick to know that mob were terrorised while they gathered for a day of mourning and survival. For many in our communities, this moment echoes a long history of threats to our safety and ongoing struggles to have our voices heard without fear of violence. While no one was injured, the idea of what could have happened in a crowd of children and families is so distressing. As we move forward in 2026, I want you to remember that no one is safe until we're all safe from racial hatred. That's the show for this week. Thanks for your company. Away was produced on Gadigal Country. Harvey O'Sullivan did the technical production. Until next time, I'm Rudy Bremer. Yalu.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.